Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Real Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service to the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on natural disasters when we come back. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed this scriptural principle of law when they put into our federal constitution these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. And in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that we conduct here twice a year at the Gordon Law School in Isabella, Missouri. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And remember, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, in the aftermath of Hurricanes Rita and Katrina, and now we see this earthquake over northern Pakistan, we have lived through, in the year 2005, three of the biggest events in history. That's right, three of the biggest events in history. These hurricanes, along with this earthquake, not that this earthquake is the only earthquake that's ever killed 70,000 people, but there aren't very many earthquakes that kill 70,000 people. You can list them. They're historically numbered and listed with the magnitude of the earthquake and the number of people that it kills. There have been some magnitude 9 earthquakes that didn't kill anybody, and there have been some magnitude 6 and 7 earthquakes that have killed 100,000. Kind of depends on where you live. The tsunami was triggered by an earthquake in 2004, if you'll remember, right after Christmas, 2004, less than a year ago. We had an earthquake in the Indian Ocean, which triggered a tidal wave. They call them tsunamis. That's a Japanese word. And it killed somewhere between 220 or 30 and 300,000 people in about 30 minutes. 300,000 people dead in 30 minutes. Now, that gets our attention. There's something perverse about human nature. We like to hear about the sinking of the Titanic. We like to go to the movies and watch it. We kind of vicariously sit there and say, what if I was on the Titanic and this was happening and I'm one of those people on the ship? Could I have saved myself from off the ship? Would I be one of the victims or would I be one of the survivors? Reader's Digest oftentimes will put in an article concerning somebody's survival. Something happens, a car wreck, an airplane crash up in the Sierras, and the guy has to walk for 300 miles in January through 15-foot snow drifts without any food or water, and he finally makes it to civilization, and he sends somebody up there to save a couple of his buddies. You know, you read these stories. These are disasters of various types and sizes. If it's three people in an airplane crash in the Sierras, it's a disaster for those three people, but the rest of us, for practical purposes, never hear about it. What we hear about is an earthquake in Pakistan that kills 70,000 people, leaves 3 million people homeless. And that earthquake, on top of Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita and Hurricane Wilma and the tsunami in the Indian Ocean, has created what the disaster agencies, that is the Red Crescent and the Red Cross, called disaster burnout. People around the world responded promptly and generously to the tsunami victims in Indonesia and around the Indian Ocean. And then, with Katrina, people responded promptly and generously with disaster relief donations. And then with Hurricane Rita, people didn't respond as well. And now with this earthquake, that's the fourth major disaster that we Americans have been involved in, or the world in general. And then, of course, the world looks to us, we Americans, for helping them. They expect us to send in our army and our aircraft carriers and our helicopters to solve these problems. But we're starting to find that, like with a Hurricane Katrina, it's not an ordinary hurricane. And it's so overwhelmed the relief agencies of the United States that we simply couldn't respond to it in the way that we normally respond to a hurricane. You know, typically a hurricane strikes Florida or the Gulf Coast, and government agencies and the Red Cross and churches and other groups dig in and they relieve the suffering. But the Hurricane Katrina left 1.5 million people homeless, caused what they're calling now about $500 billion worth of damage. That is a tremendous hit. The truth be known, by the time you rebuild all of the destroyed infrastructure and then you count in the unemployment and the lost work and the cost overruns and so on, it'll cost more than $1 trillion. It will be a staggering blow to America, probably a blow that we will not recover from. The economy went through a $1 trillion hit with the trade towers. And once that trade tower thing was past us, we call that 9/11 now, euphemistically. Now we're down here to Hurricane Katrina. And Hurricane Katrina will be another $1 trillion hit. And so the disaster agencies are using the term disaster burnout because while Americans are prepared to spend $500 billion to rebuild the Gulf Coast, the earthquake victims, which number three times as many, remember there's 1.5 million homeless on the Gulf Coast, there's 4 million homeless in northern Pakistan, Kashmir, and India. And we've promised to spend whatever it takes. That's our president there, President Bush. Of course, you can say that when you're spending other people's money. When you're the president and you're spending taxpayers' money, you're not spending yours, you're spending somebody else's. We'll just spend whatever it takes. That's what the president said, $500 billion. Well, the earthquake victims so far, and as I speak to you now, it's about 4 weeks past, they have yet to raise $1 billion for 4 million earthquake victims in northern Pakistan. Just picture the size and scope of it. Not that we Americans owe those people anything, but we're prepared to spend 500 times that amount of money. If the people in northern Pakistan had $10 billion, they would be in Fat City. They could rebuild that whole thing over there with $10 billion. We are going to spend $500 billion over here, and people will be complaining that it isn't built fast enough and it isn't built good enough. Just to kind of give you an idea as to the size and scope. Now, 70,000 people died in that earthquake over there. Only 1,000 died in Hurricane Katrina. So any way you look at it, there's fewer homeless, fewer killed, and we're going to spend 500 times as much money repairing the damage as the Pakistanis and the Indians and the Kashmiris are going to spend, and they're not even going to get $10 billion. They haven't got $1 billion in relief money yet. And now, as I speak, the winter is coming on. Winter. These people live up in the Himalaya Mountains. It'll be about the same as the city of Truckee is totally destroyed. And the people in Truckee have to live through the winter, like the Donner Party did, without any provisions, without any homes. Now, that'd be a daunting task. At least down on the Gulf Coast, you're not worried about freezing to death and 6-foot snowdrifts. They're talking today, as I speak, about more casualties dying from the elements and exposure than dying from the earthquake. 70,000 died in the earthquake. Now, picture another 70,000. Could be 100, 200, 300,000 die from the elements. Who knows? And as I speak, some villages still have not been contacted yet. I mean, I guess they must be really remote villages. The roads are knocked out. They've got landslides everywhere. And we're fascinated by this new story. I watch it every night on the news. I'm fascinated by it. And if you take a look at the number of movies that have been made over the last 10, 20 years concerning disasters like the Titanic, and they have earthquake and volcano and various flood episodes and tsunamis striking New York City and destroying the city. You know, people go to those movies and they watch them and they sit there kind of with fascination wondering, God, could that actually happen? Well, let me tell you, not only can it happen, you just saw it happen in the Indian Ocean, killed 300,000 people. And I guess a tsunami could just as easily strike New York City as it could to strike Indonesia. It hasn't done it yet, but then, you know, we've been dodging bullets over in this country for a long time, and they said, well, a hurricane could strike New Orleans, and if it did, it could flood the city, and if it did, it could kill 50,000 people. Well, it did, but it didn't kill 50,000 because they evacuated the city early on. And then the people that didn't leave, that was a real traumatic experience for them. It was a traumatic experience for our government and FEMA. It was a traumatic experience for all of us watching it. Because we've never seen that kind of damage and destruction on a scale that made 1.5 million people homeless, made 500,000 people unemployed, destroyed the 23rd largest city in the nation, and it's going to take 10 years to recover from it. And when it's all said and done, it's going to cost around $1 trillion. Now that's a disaster. Now, from disaster, we could go a step higher. I guess we could get to catastrophe. catastrophe. Throughout history, we read stories about catastrophes, disasters that have changed the course of history. I'm going to show you a couple of three of those. The course of history was changed when the Israelites left Egypt and the entire Egyptian army was destroyed in the Red Sea. Now, that was a disaster for the Egyptians. It was a blessing for the Israelites. So what on one hand is called a disaster for one group of people is called a blessing for another group of people. In a number of cases, pestilences have come into play, which have changed governments, destroyed empires, have changed the course of geopolitical events in the world. The world today is different than it would have been if it hadn't been for the bubonic plague. The world is a different place today because of an event that transpired before Christ in Athens, Greece, and changed the course of geopolitics, changed the course of the Roman Empire, changes the course of nations and city-states and empires. We're on the cusp of witnessing that today. And in Bible prophecy, that's called the Great Tribulation. We'll take a look at that Great Tribulation and the biblical proportions and the prophecies that Jesus of Nazareth gave us in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Those three chapters describing the end of the age. Most people call it the end of the world. I remember when I was a child, we used to talk in terms of the end of the world. The end of the world is coming. My Aunt Bessie told me that in World War I, they thought that the end of the world was at hand because of the number of people who were being killed, oftentimes in single battles on a single day. There were four battles in World War I that killed 40,000 people in a single day. 40,000. My God, I came from Eureka, California. The population of the city is only 30,000. Can you imagine the entire city of Eureka, California being destroyed in a day? Well, that's quite a catastrophe. So when you take a look at the 70,000 people who were killed in the earthquake in Pakistan, and just multiply that by four battles in World War I that killed 40, 80, 120, 160,000 plus people in 4 days, 4 days of fighting. So these disasters come in two forms. We have man-made disasters. The Titanic is a man-made disaster, killed 1,500 people. World War I is a man-made disaster, killed 25 million people. World War II is a man-made disaster, killed 50 million people. The Spanish flu in 1918 killed somewhere between 20 and 100 million, depending upon whose numbers you're looking at and what statistics, 20 million that we counted in Europe and the United States. 50 million is the estimate worldwide, and it could have been double the 50 million because many places around the world had flu casualties numbering 5 to 20%. One island out in the Pacific had 20% death rate from the Spanish flu. Here in the United States, it was less than 1%. So again, the bubonic plague in the Middle Ages, they tell us it killed somewhere between 50 and 100 million people. I've seen numbers as low as 30 and numbers as high as 100 million throughout. That's the worldwide number. In about 3 years, from 1347 to about 1350 or 51, killed around one-third of the population of Europe. We don't know how many people it killed in China, Japan, the Middle East, or Russia, or Siberia, or out in the Pacific Islands, or South America, or how it affected the Indians in North and South America. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But the moral of the story is there have been events in history that have killed people by the hundreds of thousands, well documented and well recorded. And we're beginning to see that today. And I saw an article, and I think I'll start right here. Natural disasters are on the rise. Natural disasters are occurring more frequently, and they're more severe when they occur. Now, most people would say, well, that's just better reporting. Well, I'm not so sure that that's the case. More and more people are being caught up in a growing number of natural disasters, and a United Nations agency said on Friday that the International Strategy for Disaster Reduction said the increase in numbers vulnerable to natural shocks was due partly to global warming. So I'm going to underline that word, global warming. You've probably heard this thing called global warming, and it comes in two forms. They're telling us that, number one, the Earth's temperature is rising inexorably and has been for a long time, causing the polar ice cap in the north to melt, and the Antarctic ice cap is melting. In fact, a big iceberg broke off of the Antarctic ice shelf the size of Rhode Island. Now, Rhode Island's not a very big state, but it is 1,000 square miles. Have you ever seen an ice cube 1,000 square miles in size? Well, that's bigger than Ozark County, Missouri, and our county is 800 square miles. And it takes about an hour to drive across it. You know, 50 miles an hour. It takes about an hour to drive from one side to the other. Now, that's a pretty good-sized piece of real estate. And if you had an ice cube that size break off into the ocean and melt, that sounds like a pretty significant event to me. You didn't hear very much about it. But global warming, they're telling us, is a disaster waiting in the wings to occur that's going to kill a lot of people. We don't know how many yet, but they're telling us that that's what's going to happen. Now, it said 254 million people were affected by natural hazards last year, natural disasters, nearly three times as many as in 1990. Okay, so let me write, underline that. That's 254 million. And then let's put down three times as many as in 1990. So I'm being told from time to time, somebody will say, well, yeah, but it runs in cycles. You know, there's a spate of them right now, but then it's going to drop off and then there won't be any for a long time. Florida got hit with four hurricanes last year. Now, we all know that hurricanes strike Florida almost every year. Not every year, but almost every year. But four hurricanes in 1 year, that was nearly unprecedented. Not quite, but almost. And then to get struck by this Hurricane Katrina, Rita, and Wilma, the last three hurricanes of the season, that's pretty dramatic. And notice the numbers, 254 million were affected last year, worldwide, 254 million. Now, that's about a fourth of a billion. A fourth of a billion. And there's about 6 billion people in the world. So you take about a fourth of a billion, that's about 1/24 of the world's population that is affected every year. That means that every 24 years, everybody on this planet statistically is going to be affected by a natural disaster. Now, that's the natural disasters. Then there's the man-made disasters like Iraq, where I just saw the numbers last night, I think it was 117,000 Iraqis have been killed in this latest round of war. I think we killed 100,000 in 1991. Now, I don't know how many people Saddam Hussein killed, and I'm sure that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, and he probably should have been removed from office one way or another. But I kind of doubt that Saddam Hussein killed 200,000 people in his country in his tenure in office, but we Americans sure did. Now, you kill 200,000 people out of a population of 27 million, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. Old Joe Stalin had a word for that. He said, when one person dies, it is a tragedy. When a billion people die, it's a statistic. Now, sitting in my fat, overstuffed office in 70-degree temperatures and having just eaten dinner and I'm waxed fat and I got a toothpick in my mouth and I haven't got a care in the world, I'm not really affected by those 70,000 dead people over in northern Pakistan or the 4 million people over there that are scrambling for the dwindling means of survival in the bitter cold. And I'm really not all that concerned about it because I guess I'm suffering from disaster burnout. You know, there's only so many disasters that you can weather. Now, the tsunami was a disaster, but by the time you get four of them in less than a year. Remember, that tsunami occurred in December of 2004. This is November of 2005, boys and girls. In 11 months, we've had four of the biggest disasters the world has ever seen. I mean, this is big time. We're getting down to biblical proportions. I mean, we're getting to talk about things that the Bible talks about, you know, like 1/4 of humanity destroyed by the pale horse. In Revelation 6, you know, those four horsemen of the apocalypse. And then there's this battle that's predicted in the scriptures. Bible prophecy talks about the battle of Armageddon, the end of the world battle, a battle that is so ferocious with so many people. It's 200,000. Now, that's an army of 200 million people. There's never been a war fought with 200 million people before. World War II, all of the combatants and all of the nations that participated in World War II didn't amount to 200 million people. And there's going to be a battle there to where the blood is going to flow to the horse's bridle. It's going to be that deep. Now, not over the whole battlefield, that's not possible, but certainly in some low spots when you kill enough people. I was over at Gettysburg one night, and there was a battle fought on a little knoll, little hill there, so it didn't amount to anything, called the Battle of Little Round Tree, or Round Top, or something like that. I think it was Round Tree, in which 6,000 soldiers died in one battle, in one afternoon. 6,000 men were killed. The creek ran red with blood for 3 days, so says the marker. I'm just reporting to you what the marker said and what the tour guide said. Of course, he wasn't there. I wasn't there. And there's this little creek down here. It's not much of a creek. Well, they call them brooks here where I'm from. In the east, I think they call it a little brook. It's probably, you know, 3 feet across. And you can step across it. You can jump across it. But it's in a low spot, and it drains the surrounding hill. 6,000 men died. 6,000 men bleeding a gallon each would be 6,000 gallons of blood. 6,000 gallons of blood. That's about enough to fill up a gasoline tanker truck. That's about what they hold, 6,000 gallons. Now, you know, you hear these kind of stories, and you take a look at the Titanic. 1,500 people died on the Titanic. 6,000 people died in that one battle at Gettysburg. That wasn't the big battle. There was Pickett's Charge, and in Pickett's Charge, 15,000 soldiers died in 1 hour. Now, people today are not used to those kinds of numbers and those kinds of casualties and that kind of death and destruction, at least not here in America. Because we've got 2,000 battle deaths, about, I don't know, 8 or 10,000 casualties over in Iraq, maybe a few more than that. And people here in America are ready to quit that war. We're done. We've had it. Not understanding the historical perspectives of the past where 40,000 people were killed on a battlefield four times in World War I. where our total casualties here in America during World War II was over 200,000. So if you take a look at the Iraq War with 2,000 dead and 10,000 wounded, you know that's a chicken feed by comparison. And we'll see that as we look at some of these numbers. Now, going back here to global warming, which I want to hit on here, because this global warming is predicted to be a catastrophe of worldwide proportions. And some of these catastrophes that are being touted, I think, are more political than real. And this global warming is one of them. I got a couple of numbers here I'll share with you. The assessment comes as the Caribbean and the United States are being hit by a series of devastating hurricanes, drawn to danger zones. The events, including earthquakes and volcanoes, floods and droughts, storms, fires and landslides, killed about 83,000 people in 2003. That's up from 53,000 deaths 13 years earlier. Well, now, you know, 15 years ago in 1990, the total deaths from earthquakes, volcanoes, floods, droughts, storms, fires and landslides killed 53,000. In 2003, it had increased to 83,000. In 2004, there was 300,000 killed in that tsunami alone. All by itself last year. This year, you got 70,000 dead from that earthquake, and the number of dead here in the United States from these hurricanes isn't worth mentioning. 1,000 people. Now, of course, those 1,000 people are very important to those 1,000 families that lost those 1,000 people. That's a tragedy. But when you're talking about 70,000 Pakistanis dead over there, that's just a statistic. 300,000 dead in a tsunami, that's just a number. As old Joe said, you know, that doesn't amount to anything. Nobody's concerned about that. Nobody sheds any tears over 70,000 dead Pakistanis. But I imagine a lot of tears have been shed over 1,000 dead Americans down there on the Gulf Coast. Well, tuck that away in your heart for a moment. Let me give you a reminder here, and we'll be back with more on natural disasters when we return. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio logs, schedule, and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Remember, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about natural disasters, this thing called global warming is one of those natural disasters that they tell us is waiting in the wings to swallow us up. Now, I don't know if it is or isn't. I'm just reporting to you what the news services and the political pundits and the scientists and the various think tanks are telling us. They tell us that our planet is deadlier because of this global warming, that deaths from natural disasters, 83,000 in 2003, 53,000 in 1990. Natural disasters, there were 337 of them in 2003, 261 in 1990. Now, the risk factors are city growth, climate change, and environmental degradation. Well, now, environmental degradation, they tell us that the swamps that surround New Orleans have been degraded, and that they are sinking into the ocean, and that the Gulf of Mexico is encroaching on those tidelands out there. And I don't doubt it. It's probably true. And then the next thing is they want to blame greenhouse gases. So they say, well, all of us people out here running our automobiles, burning up gasoline, and putting these greenhouse gases into the atmosphere is the cause of all of this. Now, I think it's pretty well acknowledged by everyone now that the temperature on the planet is in fact rising. Over the last 10 years, it's risen by 1 degree centigrade. Doesn't sound like very much, one crummy degree. That's the average worldwide. But when Hurricane Wilma was kicking up such a ruckus down here along the Yucatan Peninsula, they predicted that when it got out over the colder waters of the Gulf of Mexico, that it would lose some of its power. Now, it was a Category 5 storm when it hit Cancun, Mexico. Then when it went over the colder water of the Gulf of Mexico, it lessened to a Category 2 or 3 storm. So evidently they're telling us the truth when they say that the warmer the water, the more severe the storms, and that the water now is warmer, as evidenced by the fact that the ice shelves in both the North Pole and South Pole are contracting. They are melting. Okay, so much for that. Releasing its statistics jointly with the Center for Research on the Epidemiology of Disasters at the University of Louvain in Belgium, it said that there was a consistent trend over the last decade of an increasing number of people affected by these natural disasters. Now, there were 337 natural disasters reported in 2003, up from 261 in 1990. Okay, so over a period of 15 years, slowly but surely over the years, there's a few more occurring every year around the world. Not only is the world globally facing more potential disasters, but increasing numbers of people are becoming vulnerable to these hazards. And the problems, it said, are exacerbated because more and more people are living in concentrated urban areas and in slums with poor building standards and a lack of facilities. ISDR Director Salvino Brissino added that urban migrants tended to settle on exposed stretches of land, either on seismic faults, floodplains, or on landslide-prone slopes. The urban concentration, the effects of climate change, and the environmental degradation are greatly increasing human vulnerability to these natural disasters, he said. And alarmingly, it's getting worse every year. All right, so let's pause right there, and let me share with you. Remember that term, global warming. And a question arises, well, where does this rise in temperature come from? And what's causing this constant rise in the temperature around the world, this global warming? Well, volcano hazards and disasters. Now, volcanoes don't seem to kill very many people. I mean, just stop and think about it. Over the last 15 years or so, we remember Mount St. Helens blew up, killed 60 or 70 people. Mount Pinatubo, Pinatubo in the Philippines, blew up about 1990, and it killed a bunch of people, a few thousand, 4,000 or 5,000. You know, nowhere near the 70,000 killed up there in that earthquake zone, but it was a sizable number. And there's been some disasters, you know, like floods and one thing that have killed hundreds of thousands of people. I'll give you some of those numbers as we progress along. In fact, these numbers of killing hundreds of thousands of people go back thousands of years. So if you think that people were unable to record historically these events in the past, I don't think that's true at all. People have been able to write now, you know. People have been going to school and writing for several thousand years. And while it may be true that a lot of people are illiterate, there's always a couple of three monks or somebody around there that can write down these facts, these historical facts of history. But I wanted to share with you this paragraph, a comparison of selected recent and historic volcanic eruptions. Now, looking at this chart here, Mount St. Helens, there's 5 eruptions here. Mount St. Helens in 1980, Mount Vesuvius in 79 AD, Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines in 1991, Krakatoa in Indonesia in 1883, and Mount Tupou in New Zealand in 186 AD. And here's a comparison of selected recent and historic volcanic eruptions. And they've got them categorized. Mount St. Helens here is a 1. And what they're describing here is that when Mount St. Helens blew up, it took 1 cubic kilometer, now that's about a half of a cubic mile, of material and blew it up into the atmosphere. That's a bunch of stuff. Can you picture a block of dirt 2,200 feet, a cube of it? Do you know how much that weighs? I mean, you know, that's more than a ton or two. I mean, that's a bunch of dirt. Now, that's Mount St. Helens. That's a number 1, and it was 1 cubic kilometer. Now, Mount Vesuvius in Italy, you know, in 79 AD, which buried Pompeii, destroyed that city, killed about 30,000 people. You know, you've probably read the Reader's Digest, or maybe you've seen it in the National Geographic. Okay, that's a 3 cubic kilometers. And that's, you know, historic times. It was 2,000 years ago, but still, it's, you know, within the history. It was on this side of the death of the Messiah. Now, Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines in 1991 scored 10. It's a 10 on the scale. 10 cubic kilometers of dirt blown up into the air. That's amazing. And Krakatoa in Indonesia, 1883, is an 18. It blew up, and it put 18 cubic kilometers of material up into the air. The grand champion was Mount Taupo, T-A-U-P-O, in New Zealand, 186 A.D., about 100 years after Mount Vesuvius. It blew up, and it put 80 cubic kilometers of dirt up into the atmosphere. Okay, I just wanted to give you that little statistic there. Tuck that one away in your hearts now, because we're going to come back to it here in a minute. I'm going to back up here a page, and I'm going to read you a number. We're talking about global warming now and the disaster called global warming, right? These are the atmospheric effects that occur from these volcanoes. Mount Pinatubo's massive eruption was the largest on record in the Philippines and in the world for more than a century. It produced the largest cloud of climate-modifying gases since mighty Krakatoa erupted in Indonesia in 1883. Scientists estimated that Pinatubo's eruption added more aerosols, that is, light gases and particles, than all of human-caused greenhouse gases since the Industrial Revolution. A reduction of up to 1 degree centigrade in the Earth's average temperature was recorded by NASA satellites within a year of the main eruption. The cooling effect persisted for about 2 years, temporarily more than offsetting any global warming effect. Now there's the story. That's just one paragraph of the story, but I want to zero in on that because remember, they're telling us, and I just saw this on PBS, there was an hour-long special on global warming, and they had this foxy chick as the narrator, and she caught my attention right away, and she told me how bad global warming was. And then she interviewed a number of scientists and politicians, and then they took pictures of the Kyoto Accords, and they lambasted. In other words, it was a very pro-global warming story, telling us about all the bad things that are going to happen to us if we don't get a handle on this global warming. Global warming. And they blamed it on human activity. Human activity, that is, you and me burning gasoline in our cars, are causing these greenhouse gases. And these greenhouse gases go up in the atmosphere, and they cause global warming. Of course, there's some conflict among various scientists as to whether that's true or not. Now, I don't think that anybody is arguing about whether or not the Earth's atmosphere is getting warmer. I mean, that's pretty well documented over the last 20 years. I mean, you know, we've got weather stations all over. My local weatherman, he tells me that the average temperature for this date, every night, for this date is. And he tells me how cold it was last night and how cold he expects it to be tonight, how warm it was yesterday and how warm it was today, and then what the average is over the past 128 years that they've been keeping these records here in Springfield, Missouri. And they've been doing this around the world over the past 100 years, so they're pretty familiar with what the average temperature on planet Earth is over the past 100 years. And they're telling us that it has raised by 1 degree centigrade. And they're telling us that that is causing these hurricanes to become more violent and more of them. And then they're going one step further and they're saying, and this is being caused by burning coal in power plants and burning gasoline in your car. Now, the Industrial Revolution has a date of origin, 1760. Write that down in your notes now, boys and girls, because we're coming to the climax. So write down 1760. And this is the year 2005. So I'm going to plug in 2005 into my little Texas Instrument calculator, and then I'm going to take 1760 and hit my minus sign over there, and that's 245 years. So I got 1760 to 2005 equals 245 years. Now, the public television special the other night assured me that this rise of 1 degree centigrade was caused by mankind burning gasoline and coal in power plants, and that we humans are the sole cause of this global warming. You got that? All right, now let me go back here. And let me tell you about Mount Pinatubo again. The atmospheric effects. Mount Pinatubo. Now remember, I told you to write this down. The numbers were 1, 3, 10, 18, and 80. Mount Pinatubo, which is not the biggest volcanic eruption that has ever occurred. Krakatoa in 1883 was nearly twice as big. And in Mount Taupo in New Zealand in 186 AD was 8 times bigger than this volcano, Mount Pinatubo. All right, now let's get this. Mount Pinatubo's massive eruption was the largest on record in the Philippines and in the world for a century, producing the largest cloud of climate-modifying gases since mighty Krakatoa erupted in Indonesia in 1883. Scientists estimated that Pinatubo's eruption added more aerosols, light gases and particles, than all of human-caused greenhouse gases since the Industrial Revolution. All right? So in 245 years, Mount Pinatubo, in one eruption covering 4 months, released more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. That's just one volcano. Now, boys and girls, one volcano. One time, 1991, released more greenhouse gases than all of mankind combined in 245 years. Now, I'm just a crummy plumber, a general contractor by profession, and I don't have any degrees after my name at all. I'm not a professor. I never spent a day in college. I've got to be the dumbest horse's ass that God ever put breath into on planet Earth today. But let me tell you, boys and girls, I'm not brain dead yet. Now, if one volcano can put more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere in 4 months in 1991 than all of mankind in 245 years, it may well be true that burning coal in a power plant puts greenhouse gas into the air, and it's bad for the atmosphere. It may be bad for the environment. I'll grant you that. But if you take a look at the scale, it's like, or it's equivalent to a flea crawling up an elephant's leg with rape on his mind. It doesn't even register. Can you see that? And that's because there are 260 active volcanoes in the world. 260. I was kind of amazed when I saw that. Now, that doesn't mean that these 260 volcanoes are blowing up like Mount Pinatubo, because it's a pretty rare event when one of these guys blows up. But there's this piece of real estate called the Ring of Fire, and it goes up the west coast of the United States. And there's about, I don't know, 10 or 15 of these volcanoes. We got an active one here called Mount Lassen. Then you got another active one called Mount St. Helens. And then you got a bunch of dormant volcanoes. And these volcanoes come in two flavors. Flavor one is the explosive type volcano like Mount St. Helens. It blows up, causes a lot of damage, and then you don't hear anything more from it for 400 years. Mount Rainier is one of those, an explosive type. The other flavor is the eruptive type, like Kilauea and Mauna Loa or something like that over in Hawaii, which are constantly spewing out this lava. They're constantly erupting. Now, they're not putting greenhouse gas in the air at the rate that Mount Pinatubo did in 4 months. But they are all 260 of these active volcanoes around the world are putting some greenhouse gas into the air every day. Now, this article doesn't tell me how much they're putting in every day. But if one volcano that erupts and puts 10 cubic kilometers up in the air in 4 months puts more greenhouse gas into the air than all of mankind's activities for 245 years. It says to me that mankind's activities, putting greenhouse gases up in the atmosphere, is a non sequitur. It doesn't even count. It's a waste of your time. So the only conclusion that I could come to is that global warming then, as a potential disaster, may well be true, and the global warming may kill us all. I don't deny that. I don't know. I can't tell you. But I can tell you this, that mankind is not causing global warming. We may be exacerbating it. We may be throwing some gasoline on the fire by burning some coal in a power plant. But any of these active volcanoes is, in all probability, putting more greenhouse gas up into the atmosphere every day than all of the burning of all of the coal around the world is doing right now today in combination. Now, I'm just giving you the report. You can take it from there. Now, this report, by the way, I'm going to give you the place to go get it. It's called www.csu.edu/faculty/health/, and it's got a bunch of other stuff on here, but I think if you went to www.csu.edu, I think that you could get this report, and I'll tell you the very same thing it's telling me. Volcano Hazards and Disasters is the title of it. Hazards, Disasters, and Survival, a booklet for students and the community. Volcano Hazards and Disasters. Now, the Earth, in geological terms, is relatively young and still changing. There are over 1,500 potentially active volcanoes worldwide. Now, that's potentially active, like Mount Rainier is potentially active. 1,500 of those worldwide, and 8 to 10 erupting at any time. There are at least as many more under the oceans. Pacific region countries contain about 80% of these volcanoes, which encircle the Pacific Ocean in a belt known as the Ring of Fire. And although there are no active volcanoes in Australia, volcanologists believe that at least minor future activity is still possible from dormant volcanoes in Eastern Australia. And in another article, I got that number, 260 are active, like Kilauea and Mauna Loa, and Mount St. Helens is active, and Mount Lassen is active. Now, once in a while, one of them blows up and causes a lot of activity. A lot of lava comes out, and a lot of gases go up in the air. Global warming is being caused by these volcanoes. Whether it's cyclical or not, and these volcanoes give off these gases, and then it warms up, and then it cools off every 100 or 200 years or something. I don't know anything about that. I can't tell you that. And I don't think anybody else can either. But the next time somebody tells you that global warming is being caused by human activity, you can tell them, no, that's not true. Global warming is being caused by the volcanic activity, which is directly related to earthquake activity. Now, earthquake activity is becoming more and more severe, and they're coming more and more often. And in Bible prophecy, Matthew 24, the Messiah made a startling prophecy. He said that there would be earthquakes in diverse places. He was asked in Matthew 24, what would be the sign of the second coming? What would be the sign of the end of the age? And he said, well, gather around, boys and girls, let me tell you the story. And he gave them a list of events that would transpire. And that list of events in Matthew 24 is a corollary to Revelation chapter 6. So Revelation chapter 6 with those six seals and Matthew 24 are complementary chapters. They explain one another to you. Remember, the Bible is written line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. So when you're reading the Bible and you get a story out of Matthew 24, the rest of the story is contained someplace else. Or the explanation to Matthew 24, or the explanation to Revelation 6 is contained someplace else. So those two chapters, Revelation 6 and Matthew 24, explain one another. You've got to read both of them to get the gist of it. Now, before the second coming, which is going to occur within 40 years from the beginning. So he said, this generation shall not pass away until all of these things be fulfilled. A generation is 40 years. Of course, we call it 20. But then if the Bible said up was up and down was down, we would say, no, down is up and up is down. That's kind of what Orwell told us, remember? So we've got to argue, and we have an argument with God over just about everything, but 40 years is the biblical period of time for a generation. Now, he said this generation, that generation that will be alive, breathing air, doing stuff, will not expire or pass away until all of these things be fulfilled. So when you're reading Matthew 24 and Revelation 6, you'll see that there's some earthquakes in there, and these earthquakes today are getting bigger and worser with every passing year. So next time we'll take a look at earthquakes. This time I want to take a look at this thing called global warming. Some of what goes on around us is the little boy cries wolf. And a lot of what goes on around us is real disaster in the making. So let's see if we can't identify the real disasters from the little boy that cried wolf and then avoid it. All right, we're just about out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it right here. Remember, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. It says our time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.